Hey there, I'm Heiko, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Heiko.
Thank fucking God, this would be a shit show. I had to speak for 40 minutes.
You want this?
I'm good, I'm glad. Welcome to newcomers. I'm really glad I'm sober. This is like one of the better things that's happened. It's probably the best thing that's happened in my life. Especially when things are good and when things are bad. Right now, things are pretty shitty. My wife and I just separated a few months ago, and so going through that and trying to be going through that in a loving way and be there for her and be there for our daughter. This is the third meeting I've been to in 3 consecutive days, and it's probably the longest stretch I've been in since my kid was born 6 years ago. Anyways, my sobriety date is September 26, 2007. I got a sponsor, I worked the steps, I'm on step 8 right now, got to get that list done by tomorrow night, so I'm under the gun on that, so I'm not the best AA, I am not the worst, I am just right in the fucking middle, and I'm a procrastinator like probably 90% of the people in the room, like I assume. I don't know, I think my first alcoholic tendencies came around when I was in 7th grade, and just noticed things were kind of different for me. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin, and that's been the thing going through my whole life. I'm 43 years old, and like my whole life and through today, even with like nearly 12 years sober or 11 years sober, I will do anything to get out of how I feel or dealing with my feelings, whether... I mean, in the past, drugs, alcohol, booze, blow, methamphetamines, you know, psychedelics. I mean, today it's just like spending money, sugar, fucking internet. I don't know, porn, you name it. The internet's bad because that's what I do for a living, so that doesn't really help me being online all day long. The only semblance of like sanity I've got is actually, I mean... clearing away like the big things, like taking a step away from the drink, you know, getting some physical sobriety. That's huge for me. I mean, like I think there's so much power in the first step, the actual like putting down the drink, not smoking that joint, not doing that line, you know, there's so much there, and like only when you kind of clear that headspace, you know, and you get like a few months of mental like physical sobriety, then you can kind of start doing the work, you know, and just like cut out like the big things, do that first fourth step and like get through that thing as quickly as possible, like just like do the shittiest job and just get it done, you know. I mean, I'm a big believer in like just do the steps like to the best of your abilities, kind of like, honestly, it's like everything in life. I want to do everything perfect the first time, just like I want to be good at whatever I'm doing, whatever hobby I'm doing, or else I don't want to play. And like, it's just, that's a recipe for disaster. Whereas, I mean, just getting stuff done, like what's right in front of you, like, do the next step, go to the next meeting, you know, I don't know. It's been, it's taken me in my 40s to kind of realize that, as well as, God knows how many years of sobriety to realize like how I feel now is not how I'm always going to feel for the rest of my life. You know, there's no like, things really fucking suck now, and they are always going to suck. That is crazy thinking, and that's completely alcoholic thinking. And I'm, I live that every day, and I feel a lot better. I mean, coming to meetings like often, these 3 days of meetings and straights, it's done wonders for me. Just being able to listen and get out of myself, and hear other people's experiences, and that other people have got bigger things that are going on and worse times they're going through, you know, and like my things are, they suck, but they're small potatoes, you know. I mean, my life is really good today. I mean, I've got a healthy fucking kid. My wife and I were separated, and we're probably going to get divorced, and we love each other. I love her. I adore her. She's one of the best people I've ever met in my life, and to have had 10 years with her or 12 years together, I mean, that's fucking fantastic. My parents are both still alive. I mean, that's a blessing. My knees have held up into my 40s, and I run a lot. That's like fucking amazing. Anyways, I don't really know how much else I've got, other than, you know, like this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And like, oh, for the people that are new, to like, you really owe it to yourself to just like give it a good shot. You know, Not to mention, this is my third time being sober. I got sober when I was 24 the first time. Sober a couple years, went out, was sober a couple years, and then came out to this last stint, you know? And, like, I've quit smoking so many fucking times, like 20-something times, you know? And, like, I just kept coming back and doing it, you know? And, like, there's no perfect way to do it. And, like, and if you go out and you have a slip, whatever you want to fucking call it, I don't know, just come back. There's no, your ego is like, don't let your ego get in the way, you know? Don't let what you think other people are going to think about you get in the way. You're here for you, and you fucking deserve it. You deserve to have a good life, deserve to be happy, and you deserve to, like, just to live, you know? Anyways, thank you so much.
Brian, I'm an alcoholic and drug addict.
Hey, Brian.
So now this is the real shit show. So Heiko was here when I got here, so it's cool that he's still here. I'm definitely emotional. I've definitely been through what you're going through, but it happened to me like immediately after getting sober. And the last time I spoke at this meeting was, I was 7 months sober, and I had just finished my fifth step, and I had this experience where I just stopped thinking about drinking. Like, literally, up until that point, all I could think about was drinking and shooting drugs. Drugs are a huge part of my story, and even though I hadn't really been shooting drugs when I got sober this time, like, I was just obsessed with it. I'm going to do this a little bit out of order. I'm going to talk about what's going on with me today, and then I'll kind of circle back. So, last week, I got this phone call, or I didn't get a phone call, I got a text from my brother, who said, oh, hey, Dad's going to come out and visit and meet the girls. So my little brother has two nieces, and my dad's never met them, and he's also never met my son. My son's 11, and he hasn't met my older brother's youngest son. So I haven't seen my dad in 18 years. I've talked to him, and I've had the opportunity to, like, make amends via letters and phone calls, but I still haven't seen him. And so there's this opportunity to see my dad. And it felt really great. It's a huge, long story, which I'm not going to get into. But I just remember this moment, like, it was just before 9/11, 2001. And I hadn't quite fallen all the way down the scale, but I was shooting drugs, I was working in this bar, lived in this shithole apartment, and he would come and visit me at work. I bartended a happy hour shift. And he would come every Tuesday, and he'd have two Miller High Lifes, and then, you know, I'd say goodbye. And this one, sorry, let me do this. This one day, he'd come to visit, and I had just recently stolen money from my grandmother. So my dad lived in Annapolis, I lived in D.C., and my grandmother lived about 30 minutes south. And so I would go and get groceries for her, do some stuff around the house, and I knew she always kept wads of cash in an envelope underneath her mattress. And I was desperate for money one night, and I broke into the house while she was sleeping, and I crawled into her room, and I reached between the mattress, and I pulled out the envelope, and I took initially what I needed to be well, and then I took a little more. And then I put the envelope back, and I was, like, crawling out of the bedroom, and she kind of rolled over, looked at me, and then rolled over and went back to sleep. And I was like, oh, well, maybe she won't remember. So, like, about a week later, my dad comes on Tuesday, 6 o'clock. He orders a High Life. He orders another one. And then he goes, can I talk to you outside? And I said, sure.
So I go outside, and he just fucking hit me, just right in the face. He never hit me before in my life. And I knew why. And he said, stay away from your grandmother. I don't ever want to talk to you again. So that's the last time I saw him. So last Saturday, we had a great conversation. Yeah. He's excited to come out. He's excited to participate. He's like, it's been too long. I want to know my grandchildren. I want to see my boys. And so that was pretty heavy for me, right? So Sunday I went to this meeting that I knew my old sponsor was at because I wanted to talk to him and tell him what's going on because he knew. He knew the story and, yeah, he's just important to me. So I go to this meeting and I get this phone call from a former coworker, and he's like, hey, I need your help. I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, well, I went to play Dungeons and Dragons on Friday night, and 4 hours later I was smoking crack. And I was like, what? Like, how do you go from there to there? And he's like, like, I don't get it. And he's like, I don't get it either. That's why I'm fucking calling you. He's like, I need your help, you know? And it was just like, whoa. Like, it just kind of hit me, you know? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And so we talked on Sunday, and it's just, like, I've known this guy the entire time I've been sober this time, which I forgot to mention. So I got sober February 22nd, 2010. So I just recently had celebrated 9 years. And so I've watched him this whole time just keep doing the same thing over and over. But, like, he keeps coming back. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the one thing he does right so far. So it was like a super emotional. So I'm really good at avoiding feelings, kind of like what he was just saying. And I don't really know what I'm feeling. I don't know what I'm feeling. Like, I pretty much, like, I haven't seen my dad. So I've been in a weird spot. And, like, the one thing that I wish I didn't do that I'm hopefully getting better at is, like, talking about it, because I don't want to talk about it, because it makes me feel uncomfortable. Like, I get emotional, and I'm vulnerable. And, like, what does this have to do with drinking? For me, it has a shit ton to do with drinking, you know? There's all kinds of feelings attached to it, and, like, the reason I shoot drugs and the reason I drink is so I don't have to feel, right? I just fucking don't want to feel. I had a super busy week at work, and just before coming here, I have another really close friend of mine who is struggling. It's probably why my phone is blowing up, but is somebody who's extremely close to me who, like, cannot fucking get sober. And I'm not turning this into an Al-Anon meeting, but I just, I'm sorry. But it's hard to watch, right? It's hard to watch. And I didn't want to come here. Like, I wanted to speak for 10 minutes, and I wanted the person that was supposed to show up to speak for 40 so I could just listen. So that being said, like, there's other shit that went on this week, but here's the thing. I'm not drunk. Like, I'm not fucking high, right? I'm not fucking stealing. I'm not pushing my kid in a stroller to the fucking dope man's house. Like, I'm not doing that shit. And that's important to me, you know? Like, I forget that, like, oh, that's what happened this week. I made an amends. During that time where I'd stole money from my grandmother, I was with this woman. And we did everything together. We did some of the shadiest, gnarliest, awful things. And on July 24th, 2002, we both got arrested. And we were in big trouble. And she was going to get deported. She was from another country. And long story short, we were able to avoid major prosecution. I did some time in a couple of different facilities, and I got out, and I tried to do the right thing, and she did her stuff, and then we had seen each other later, about a year later,
And when I saw her, it just like that whole rush of like that life I had been living had hit me, and I didn't treat her very nicely. I was very rude to her, and so I wanted to like make that right. Like I couldn't make right everything, you know, but I had this conversation with her that was just not what I expected. You know, like this person's doing wonderful and their life is good. And I got to say some things that I hadn't said. And I don't know how to explain it, but like, I don't have to think about that anymore. I don't have to think about like all the harm and the hurt that I caused this person, because that's not who I am today. And so that was also very emotional. How much time do I have? Oh, Jesus. So anyway, I didn't really start drinking until I was 13. Before that, I like to huff gas. I have to like to have gasoline, Freon, butane. That's how I started, which is really weird. I guess because I grew up watching my family drink, you know? I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'll do this. You know, like, that made more sense to me. Plus, I like the way my voice sounded when I would... I'm so high right now. The first time I got drunk, we broke into a car because we wanted to push it down a hill and watch it run into a building. But before we did that, there was a bottle of Canadian Club in there and a Beretta 380. So we stole the gun and we stole the whiskey and we pushed the car down the hill. I was a bad kid. When my parents split up, my dad didn't really know how to do anything. Like, he knew how to go to work, but he didn't know how to cook, and he didn't know how to do the laundry, and he didn't know how to do the stuff, all the shit that my mom did. And so it was just he and I. My younger brother went with my mother, and my older brother was in the army. And so by default, I just kind of started doing those things. And as a result of, like, taking care of the house, he kind of gave me freedom, you know, to, like, go and do what I wanted. And initially it was great, and initially I didn't abuse it, but then I quickly did. And by the time I was 14, I had gotten my first felony. I was put on house arrest. So I couldn't go anywhere without my dad. So this links back to why this not seeing my father is important. We had a unique relationship. I didn't really like drink and do a lot of drugs in my teens. It wasn't until later in life. Because I was on house arrest and I couldn't go anywhere without my dad, in order to go to my best friend's house, my dad had to come with me. My dad had met my best friend's mom, and they became romantic, and they fell in love, and then they got married. So my best friend became my stepbrother, which was super fucking weird. And they got married in our backyard, which was even worse. So it was just a really weird time. Thank you. Yeah, I talk loud too. When that happened, it changed the relationship. So my best friend really, we weren't really best friends anymore. But we still did everything together because we were brothers. And we got into lots and lots of trouble. And we stole things, and we set things on fire, and we broke things. And then we started to party. And we partied really fucking hard. I'll try to like speed it up a little bit, but as a result of like all the shit we did, I seemed to be the one who always got in trouble. I'm the one who always kind of like took the rap, and eventually I got locked up again. Well, I didn't get locked up the first time, but I got arrested again, and then I got locked up. And that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a detention center in kind of a rich county in Northern Virginia, and so they had all these programs. And so I was lucky enough to go into this drug rehab that was in this facility. And I had no idea what AA was. And I was the youngest guy in a room full of 30 people. And they were all 15 years plus. And they had all, you know, some of them were going to prison for a really long time. Some of them were just waiting for court, kind of like I was. And they just kind of, I don't know, saved me in a way, right? I guess they saw that I had an opportunity to not do what they did. And it was a unique experience. And, like, I hated it and I loved it at the same time. And when I got out, it was October 29th, 1994. So we're the same age. I'm 43 also. I got out. I fucking went to AA, right? I was like, this AA shit got me out of going to prison, so I'm going to keep going. So that was my motive. And I kind of had a reservation, like, maybe I would drink again. But I'm not going to drink right now because I'm on probation. And so I went to meetings. I got a sponsor. I got a service commitment. And I participated. And I worked the first three steps. And I stayed sober for about a year. And then I got to the fourth step. And for some reason, I didn't really want to take a look at myself. And so it just all kind of, like, started to slip away. That, like, resistance to going further through the steps ultimately led me to drink again. And when I got drunk, I was at a party with a very, very close friend of mine. And she and I were not romantic. But that night, we were just super drunk. And we ended up having sex. And I don't really remember it. And neither does she. But she got pregnant. And so now I'm 20-something, and I'm not really going to AA anymore. I had an okay job at that time. And now I'm going to have a child. And I wasn't ready for it. But I was, like, going to do it. But for some reason, I had this thought, like, oh, I should go back to AA. But I was like, nah, I don't need it. I can do this. And I did. I think it was just kind of like this partial fear and, like, also, like, wanting to be responsible because I was going to be a dad. And what happened is that they were born prematurely. They lived for a short period of time, and then they passed away because one child actually became twins. And so that was really intense for me. And I remember specifically being in the hospital and, like, holding my child, and the other child had already passed, and thinking to myself, if I was an alcoholic, I would be drunk right now. And I wasn't, right? I wasn't. And so I said to myself, like, okay, well, that's good. At least I'm not an alcoholic. Like, this baby's going to die, but I'm not an alcoholic. That's how fucked up, you know, that's how selfish I am. I'm more concerned about whether or not I'm an alcoholic and this baby's dying. And I don't think I've ever said that specifically because I didn't want to admit that that's how selfish I am. So I didn't drink. I didn't use drugs because I wasn't an alcoholic anymore. And I kind of lost it a little bit. I learned to love Becky because she was pregnant, you know, and we went through this traumatic thing. But it was very hard for her to deal with it, and I couldn't really do anything to console her. And so at a certain point, we decided to split up. And so when that happened, I was like, well, shit, I really have nothing to do. So I took off, and I traveled around. And it's really easy to not fucking drink and do drugs when you're, like, have no obligations. You have nowhere to be, nobody to serve, nobody to be responsible for. And you're in the present moment, or I was, anyway. And I just didn't really want to do it. You know, I didn't want to be fucked up. And that was, like, a really beautiful part of my life, even though it was short-lived. I got to go around, and I got to see a lot of things. and meet a lot of different people. But then eventually, I had to come back to life. And I moved back to Northern Virginia. 20 minutes? Jesus Christ, I got 20 minutes left. And I started hanging out with AA people again. But I wasn't going to meetings. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll just kind of stick around people that are good. And that lasted for a short period of time. And eventually I started drinking again. And then I met this woman who I spoke of earlier, Maria. She worked at this coffee shop. She was beautiful, and she was Russian. And to me, she was like something extremely special. And when we met, initially it was great. But she did all this stuff that I hadn't had an opportunity to do yet, which was like heroin and cocaine and like stuff that I had thought about and learned about when I was in rehab in jail and thought, wow, I really want to fucking do that. And so here I am years later and like, she's doing it and I'm super into her, so I'm going to do that shit too. So from that point until July 24th, 2002, wasn't a very long period of time. It was about just over 2 years from the first time I did it to like getting arrested. And so the other really super intense part of my life was getting arrested. Like, this sounds crazy, but it saved my life. The reason being is because while I was shooting drugs, one day I bought some bad coke because I was a speedball guy. So if you just give me a few minutes, I won't really talk about drugs so much except for this important story. I got a staph infection, and I didn't do anything about it. And that staph infection turned into a blood infection, which then turned into a bone infection, and I was basically dying. And I knew I was sick, but I was too afraid to go to the hospital because I didn't want to stop. But I also did want to stop because I just didn't know what to do, you know? And so, like, I literally, I tried to kill myself a couple of times, didn't really tell anybody about it because it didn't work. And I just kept going. Because, like, if I just had that 20 bags of dope and 10 bags of coke every day, like, I could keep going, you know? Like, I could keep going. And when I woke up, I knew, like, I was deathly ill. Like, I had vertigo. But then once it got in me, I was good to go. And in order to keep going, I had to steal things. And I had to steal lots of shit. And it was like a full-time job. So when I had this police officer standing there with a fucking gun pointed at me, and I didn't die because he didn't shoot me. Like, literally, he was like, let me see your ID. And I went to grab my wallet, and he was like, oh, fucking blow your head off. And I'm like, you just wanted to ask for my ID. So I think he might have accidentally shot me. But I went into this jail. It was a Friday evening. And I remember just being so like, yes, like, I don't have to do this anymore. And I laid down on the floor in the cell that I was in. And that's it. I like passed out. And I remember waking up, and this guard was picking me up. His name was Bob. I remember that. And he picked me up and he like carried me out of the fucking jail and put me in a cruiser and took me to the hospital. And I didn't realize, but I was covered in my own excrement. Everything. And I just was like, what is going on? And it was Monday. So Friday to Monday, I like don't remember anything. And they took me to this hospital and they told me I was going to die if I didn't take this, at the time, experimental dose of antibiotics, right? And I initially said no. I didn't want to do it. Like, because I wanted to die, you know? And I signed all my papers, do not resuscitate. And this nurse lady convinced me that I should live. And, fuck. So I said, okay, yeah, I'll live. And so I did it, right? I was in this hospital for 9 weeks. And The first few days, they had me handcuffed to the bed. And then finally, they were like, this fucking guy can't move. You know, like, I couldn't walk. Like, he's not going anywhere. So they, like, I had, you know, like, a deputy with me the whole time. But it was horrible. It was the worst experience of my life. Like, I had to have people come in and clean me. And, like, I couldn't eat anything. Like, everything, all the medicine went right through this line in my chest. And I got fed through a tube. And I remember this nurse was, like, bathing me. And I was so embarrassed. And I was like, you know, I'm not really like this. And that's when I knew I was starting to get better. But then I had to go back. You know, I had to go back to jail. And I remember saying, like, I fucking got to go back to AA. And I was in this little podunk fucking county jail on the border of West Virginia. And they didn't have AA meetings. And I would ask the guy who brought the books around, I'm like, can you give me an AA book? Can you give me an AA book? So then eventually I went to this other facility and I went to a couple meetings, but I got out and I didn't go back to AA, right? I didn't go back to AA. I started my drinking career. I had moved to this neighborhood in Washington, D.C. called Mount Pleasant, and I had found the bar. I had found, like, Cheers, like, essentially, like, the show I grew up with, like, there it was. I'd walk in, and be like, Brian, and I'd be like, hey, and I'd spend all my money, and it was great, and it was awesome, and, like, I'm still friends with a lot of those people today. It was, like, the best part of my life, but I do this thing when I'm drinking where I get angry. I get to this point where if I see something going outside of the way I think it should go, then I have to do something to fix it. And as a result, like, I started hitting people that I didn't know in my neighborhood that were, like, maybe a little shady, maybe, like, what I thought at the time needed some correction, you know? And I hate talking about it because it's not who I am today. Like, I don't like to resort to violence. And it's just such a weird thing where, like, there would be bad people on the street, and then, like, I would beat them up, and then people would be like, oh, good job, you know? Like, that's great. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm doing the right thing. But I wasn't. I was, like, completely putting myself in danger, and I was putting my current ex-wife, we weren't married yet, but she was terrified. She was like, what are you doing? Why are you fucking so angry? And I didn't know. And I went to an anger management therapist, and I showed up drunk, and the guy was like, I'm not going to talk to you. You know, like, fucking, you're drunk. And I was like, but I'm angry. Like, you're not going to help me. And he's like, I can't help you. You should probably go to AA. And I was like, oh, God damn it. Okay, so I need to get sober. So, Carmi, that's my ex-wife, short for Carmelia. She's like, she was desperate, right? And so she was like, listen, my parents bought this retirement home. They're not moving in right away. They need a bunch of work on it. I'm a carpenter, so that's my trade. They're like, let's move out to California. You can work on the house. I can study for the bar exam. And, like, we can just get ourselves out of this mess. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we moved out here. We moved from Washington, D.C., heart of the city, to Grass Valley, California, which was completely different. It's completely fucking different. Just all of it. Yeah. So I got there, and I was like, oh, this is beautiful. This is great. It takes fucking 30 minutes to get everywhere, and there's no black people. You know, like, I wasn't used to that. I wasn't used to, like, this white Christian weird mountain people. It just wasn't what I was used to, you know? And I started drinking again, you know? Like, I did the work, and great, 10 minutes, thank God. Let me wrap it up. This is a huge drunkalogue, and I'm sorry. Let me just fast forward. When I got out of jail that last time, I told myself, I'll never fucking shoot drugs again, ever. Like, I convinced myself. I think I even said it to God that I would never do that. We got married. Life was great. We moved over by the cemetery, Piedmont Avenue. It's a beautiful home. Things are going wonderful. I'm kind of drinking. I'm kind of, like, keeping it together. We go to the OBGYN for a normal visit, and they say, you got to go to the hospital. There's something wrong. And so she's like, okay. And so she got checked into the hospital, and they had to induce labor. And so I've got this fear and trauma, right, from this first thing. And I didn't know. So what do I do? I'm going to go get you some clothes. And I go to get clothes, and I go and I get some morphine. I go to the drug dealer, and I get some morphine. And I take it, and I'm good. And I show up, and we're there for several days. And it's such a long, intensive labor. And they start giving her fentanyl for pain. But they don't give it all of it. They, like, give her some of it, and then they leave the little thing on the cart. And so one, two, three, four, they stack up, and I take them. And then I take some needles from the cart, and I say, I'm going to go get you some more clothes. And I go home, and I do the thing I said I would never do again, and I shoot up. And I'm sitting there on the toilet in my bathroom at home while she's in fucking labor, and I'm terrified, but I don't know it. And that's when I'm like, I had my moment of clarity, right? Like, everything was crystal fucking clear. However, it still took me 2 years to get here. And all of that stuff, like, I still wouldn't even know all of that if I didn't have the opportunity to, like, look at it squarely, right? So now I'm sober. I'm sober. I go to rehab. I tell everybody what's going on. It's 2 years later. February 16th. Okay. My kid's birthday, second birthday, February 10th. My ex-wife's birthday is February 12th. My mom's birthday is February 14th. And I go into rehab on February 16th. So it was like, it's kind of this thing. And I went into rehab. I was in rehab for 6 days, and I got out February 22nd, 2010. And I just started going to meetings. And I didn't really know what the fuck I was doing, and I really wasn't just talking. I was just showing up and just trying to get through it. 3 weeks into sobriety, we got into this argument, my ex-wife and I, and she tried to stab me. Like, she was so fucking angry about everything that had happened, and it just came out. And this is somebody that's not like that at all, ever. So it was like, what's going on? And I grabbed the knife, and she just, like, hit me in this, like, stabbing motion, and just, I hate you. I never want to see you again. So, something I'm used to hearing, right? And so I was like, fuck, what do I do? Like, I can't be here and be sober. Like, I don't want to leave my family, but I don't want to fucking drink again. And so I moved into a sober living environment. Just that term made me cringe, like, sober living environment. But it's fucking saved my life. Like, literally saved my life and changed everything. And those guys in there, they, like, were like the people that I had met in jail. They were just different faces. And they said, it's going to be okay. Just, like, don't worry about it. And they took me to meetings, and they introduced me to people. And, like, it started to feel like, okay. Like, shit's going to be okay. And, yeah, like, it was. It was like, okay. Like, I didn't drink. I went to meetings. I eventually got a sponsor. And we started working the steps. And I had that experience that I talked about in the beginning. Like, I did a shitty fucking four-step. Like, I literally, that was the advice that I got from this guy, Willis. I was hemming and hawing. I was having such difficulty. And he's like, fuck it, man. Just do a shitty one. And I was like, shitty, I can do shitty so good. And I finished it, like, right after that, 3 hours. I wrote everything down. I met with my sponsor. It took us 3 days. And it changed me. It, like, everything changed in that moment. And, like, I wanted to finish. Like, I wanted to do the steps. And I had the opportunity. And, like, after step 9, the promises actually started occurring. And I hated hearing them. And I'm like, don't fucking make me promises. Don't tell me you promised me anything. Because I couldn't fulfill any promises of my own, right? So I didn't believe that, like, that shit could happen. And it did. One thing that Heiko had said that was super important, and I have to remember, like, I'm not fucking perfect. Like, I fucking do AA minimally. You know, the last time I went to a meeting was Sunday, you know? Actually, that's not true. I went this morning at 6:15 a.m. but, like, I feel like I'm the worst AA ever, you know? But, like, the reality is, like, I'm not the person that I just described to you. Like, I'm not that guy anymore. So, in my mind, this shit works. You know, like, it fucking works. And I'm kind of convinced every now and then, again, like, because I forget. Because I want to lie. Like, when shit gets uncomfortable, I want to lie to you. I want to, like, avoid you. I want to do all the things that I did my entire life because I haven't had the opportunity to, like, completely change, you know? But I've changed enough to not drink anymore. And, I owe it to AA. So if you're new and you're afraid, fuck yeah. I'm still kind of afraid, you know? But, like, I don't have to drink anymore. So if you need help, ask somebody. Because every time I've asked for help, I've received it. And, like, I don't know where else you can do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian.